5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When Norm was out on the casting call, who did Cheers turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When Mike Tyson became the youngest heavyweight champion in history and no sparring partners could be found, who did the champ turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now, this world-renowned barfly slash pugilist has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
He's only mortal, folks.
Paul Lavoie!
His pronouns are he, him, and hungry. Really?
Captain Radio here, inviting you to another episode of the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show.
All right, thank you very much, Captain Radio. You know what that means, Dan.
I do. It's time for the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show. And, you know, our lead in there with one of our favorite people, Lee Shoblum, Captain Radio, actually has a role in today's show.
Right. That's what I hear.
It's really kind of neat.
Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. And I have to get this in, Dan, brought to you in part by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating.
And, boy, it's time to call those guys.
It's getting there, isn't it? Thank goodness for mid-90s this week, anyway.
Absolutely.
All right, so go ahead and introduce our guest.
Well, I'll tell you, we've got an interesting show today because it revolves around the first movie ever filmed in Lake Havasu City, which was called Day of the Wolves. And for those pioneers that remember the filming of that movie, it was really kind of an iconic moment for us as a community. We were very small, and we had a producer come in and want to film a movie into our town. It became a fascinating topic of discussion, and later on we were introduced to a filmmaker by the name of Greg Quinn. Greg created the documentary, or I should say we'll call it in the works today, and he's our guest speaker for today. Greg, are you with us?
Yeah, I sure am. Good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's wonderful to have you today, and you know, we have listeners who really are not familiar with our topic today, so I wondered if you could first tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, sure. So I'm actually currently a software consultant based out of San Diego, so filmmaking is the second string for me. But my original background was in science research, both in the UK, where I came from, and here in the US. I've been here for about 30 years. When I started in 2007, when I started my documentary about Dare the Wolves, I was at the same time running a small research group at the San Diego Supercomputer Center here in San Diego. So that's a little bit about my background.
That's an interesting hobby, if you will, or second nature way of life for you. That's pretty interesting, jumping from one industry to another.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, how did you come about getting involved with this documentary? What spurred you? What was so interesting that made this a topic for a documentary?
Right. So in about 2007, I just acquired a bunch of high-definition video equipment, and I was looking for a couple of what I thought would be fairly simple projects. It didn't quite turn out that way. But this was one of them, Dare the Wolves, because it's always been a slightly weird film that fascinated me. I really liked the music score. I thought the storyline was very interesting. The baddies kind of get away with it in the end, or at least you don't see them being, you know, taken away to prison. In 1971, when the film was made, although it was pretty much released in 73, that was kind of unusual. So I touched base with a few people involved with the film to see if there was an interesting story, background story to this. And it sounded like there was. And then I checked to see that from a practical perspective, I could get to use things like film clips, music, and get you know, other people into it. And it seemed like it was a sort of viable proposition. And so fairly quickly, I was able to connect with many of the principals of the film, who at that time, in 2007, were still with us. It's unfortunately not the case here, as we are here in 2023. And so that's how it started.
Man, you know, you're right about that topic where the bandits basically get away with it. You never really heard about that. It was considered inappropriate almost to let a bad guy get away. And so to have that happen, I mean, I can only imagine the guys cheering on, hey, wow, they got away with it.
So, yeah, I mean, so the TV didn't really have a production code like, you know, the films had this so-called Hays Code, which went on for years, you know, but that kind of broke down in the mid-60s. But TV was still fairly conservative. So to have, you know, to have the bad guys not seem to be caught, even in the sort of rather gentle way that it's presented in Day of the Wolves, you know, was still kind of unusual at that time, I think.
Wow, that's fantastic. So, you know, one of the actors' sons is on the air with us here in a moment. It's Randy Scarborough.
Oh, great.
And so, of course, that's Mel Scarborough's son. Randy, are you there?
Randy, can you hear us okay? You know what? It didn't connect.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully he's listening. He can call back.
Yeah, so hopefully Randy will call back in. And we do have a couple of guest speakers that will call in that were in the movie and or had relatives that were in the movie during our show today. So the origin of making that movie is probably one of the favorite stories of our community as we talk about when the producer came. And what was the producer's name again, do you recall?
So the person who wrote, produced, and directed the film was a guy called Ferdy Groffé Jr., who was the son of a quite famous composer and arranger from the 1940s and 50s. So it's Ferdy Groffé Jr. is the guy.
So he came to town, and, you know, as the story goes, he hit Lee Shoblum's office and talked about producing this film. And as the conversation went on, it turned out that he was very low budgeted and was asking for the loan of almost all the equipment, microphones, everything, the lighting, everything. The city chipped in. Needless to say, KFWJ's very own Lee Shoblum offered up a tremendous amount of equipment to help produce the film. And so it became a community movie, if you will, with everybody getting involved, including, of course, some of the actors that were in the film. And you had the pleasure of, I had the pleasure of meeting you, and we got together with all those individuals, and you did an interview with several of them.
Yeah, I did. I was very, very lucky. Not everyone either I was able to trace or was still with us, but I got to speak to yourself, to Floyd Hamilton, who I believe has been on your show, who was really a linchpin. He was the location coordinator as well as being playing in the film as the chauffeur and plane pilot. I spoke with Mel Scarborough. I spoke with Wendy Alvord, now Wendy Clapp,
yep.
Who was the dune buggy girl.
Yep.
Maxine Ratz, or Maxine Holmgren now, whose husband was Jack, one of the deputies in the film. Spoke with Ginny Bilaki, Ginny Frank, and who was the little girl at the end of the film, spoke with Lee Schoblum, spoke with Steve Mononi, Annette Mononi, his sister, Mike Mononi, his brother, Jim Tedeschi, Jim Sterling, what a character. He provided the electrical support for the production. And, you know, he's someone who got in at the ground floor in Lake Havasu. And I spoke with Ruth Finley, who was the widow of John Finley, who provided production support. So I was very lucky in getting such a wide group of people who were very, very nice about, you know, taking part.
Hey, Greg, Paul Lavoie again. Do you own the first? It's kind of a two-part question. Do you own the film reels, the original reels? And for the documentary, how did you convert all of that so people could see some of the scenes or what you were referencing as far as the film goes? Because obviously there's different format now. Nobody works in film anymore. So how did that conversion go for you?
Well, that's a really good question. So it goes to the problem of why you really kind of never see the film on TV anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There really aren't very many good transfers, or arguably any good transfers. So the distribution of the film pretty much stopped from about 1990, or probably even earlier than that. And so the transfers were pretty old NTSC transfers. Some of them degraded over time.
Mm-hmm.
I used the transfer that Ferdy Groffé gave me access to. That was his one. And what's interesting is, if you compare it with the quality that you see on, for example, YouTube, of watching Dead of the Wolves on there, and there are a couple of places where you can see it on there, you know, it doesn't have any of the lines in it or anything else, but it's really low resolution. Ferdy Groffé has the original negative, 35mm negative in storage, and I think it's going to have to wait until that gets a high-definition transfer, you know, before we can really, you know, see a quality transfer of the thing, and maybe even start to see it again on television, or whatever.
So you said it's on YouTube. Is the film in public domain now?
No. So here's the deal. In 1971, when the film was made, and I have to say that I'm not an intellectual property lawyer, so don't take this as legal advice. But in 1971, when the film was made, the film had the copyright logo in 1971 on it. The film itself was apparently never registered with the Library of Congress, so it wasn't copyrighted in that sense, although it had its, you know, it had a copyright of, I think, 28 years, which would have run out in the late 90s. And so from that point on, people assumed that it was in the public domain. Now, I got to tell you that the soundtrack, the score for Dare the Wolves was by a guy called Sean Bonniwell. Really nice guy. He was a rock musician from the band Music Machine.
Hmm.
And his stuff, his music, certainly was copyrighted at the Library of Congress. So arguably, it was never really fully in the public domain. But people assumed it was, so you started seeing it appear on lots of sites. Ferdy Groffé copyrighted the movie back, kind of like they copyrighted... there was a famous movie, with Jimmy Stewart in it, It's a Wonderful Life. And that fell out of copyright, and every station was showing it at Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right.
That was brought back into copyright based on, you know, a connection to the screenplay, which was apparently still under copyright. And I think Ferdy Groffé re-copyrighted Dare the Wolves, but only the visuals. The soundtrack, the sound is not copyrighted per se, although the soundtrack music is. So the copyright is a little bit complicated at the moment.
Yes.
And the stuff you're seeing on YouTube, I can't talk to whether that's been properly licensed or not. I don't know. My guess is in some cases it hasn't, but I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Man, that's really something.
Surprised the lawyers haven't gotten involved with that and taken it down. But anyway, go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was going to say, I know that several of the people that are still with us today are listening to the show today. If you are one of those individuals that Greg mentioned, you know, please don't hesitate to give us a call.
Right. It's 928-854-KNTR, 928-854-5687. You about ready for a break, Dan?
Yeah, we'll take a quick break and we'll come right back.
All right, we're going to take that short break. We're, again, talking with
Greg.
Filmmaker.
Filmmaker Greg Quinn.
Greg Quinn. I didn't have the notes up in front of me. I do all that electronically. So, anyway, yeah, that's just how it is now. Why waste paper, right? Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie. You're listening to the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show with host Dan Del Santo. Stay with us. Come back with a little Rolling Stones. Who doesn't like the Stones in the old days,
man,
right?
We love that. Well, it was new back then.
Yeah, absolutely. Speak Out brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Also, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, GDK LLC, Springberg Wealth Management, Patio Paradise, by Les Olson IT, your company's one source for office technology at lesolson.com/Kingman, and by The Chair. Did you know about this one, Dan?
I did.
Yeah, Dallas and Danny providing Havasu-style dining and great music with live entertainment in a flip-flop atmosphere overlooking the London Bridge. It's The Chair, and I know Dan likes that flip-flop atmosphere, right?
You gotta go down there. Those guys really do it right.
Right. And, of course, our Havasu Pioneers radio show sponsor, Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. Don't forget, you can find the archive of this show, which is episode number 46. Can
wow.
you believe that?
Wow, man.
46. And that's at KNTRtalk.com. We stream live there as well. Or you can tell your Alexa app, Alexa, tune to KNTR Talk on TuneIn. And she'll do it. It's all done.
You got to love that.
Connects right away.
That's very cool.
Absolutely. All right. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, we're back with our guest speaker today, Greg Quinn, who's a film producer, who is the gentleman responsible for trying to create the documentary for Day of the Wolves. And we have a caller that just called in who was actually on that movie. And he was in that movie. And we have Steve Benoni with us. Steve, are you there?
Hey, Danny. How are you? Hi, Greg.
Hey. Hey, Steve. How you doing, mate?
Good.
So, you know, we got Greg on. We're talking about Day of the Wolves. And I know it's been a few years, Steve, but, you know, maybe you can share a quick anecdote about what it was like to be in the movie.
Well, it was a heck of a lot of fun being on a movie set, working with like Martha Heyer and Richard Egan. It was awesome. I was like 12 years old. So, you know, I was lucky to be a... What's that?
You were lucky to be what?
I was lucky to be selected in the little bit of an audition that we did, about 12 people. And, let's see. Yeah, it was 3 days on the set, and it was just a lot of fun.
We should mention that he's in the middle of a lake.
Yeah, which lake are you in the middle of calling from?
I'm in the middle of Saguaro Lake on my new used boat, the one I'll be bringing to Lake Havasu City when I move there in the near future.
Hey, Steve, do you have a cabin or something? We're picking up a little wind interference at times.
Yeah, I'll try to get down here a little bit.
All right, that'd be great.
So, you know, then down the line, you got interviewed with Greg. Do you recall the interview?
Oh, yeah, Greg, that was great. He came out to my house in Phoenix and interviewed myself and my brother. And, still waiting for this movie to come out. That was a lot of fun.
Greg, is it tougher to work with, you know, 12-year-olds? On a movie set? What's the difference between working with, say, a 12-year-old and somebody who's got experience as an adult with movies?
Well, I've never directed
I never directed children, so I would imagine. I mean, you know, Ferdy Grofet said that Steve lit up the screen when he was doing his scenes with Richard Egan and Martha Heyer. Uh-huh. He thought very highly of them, and Steve was the only person who actually got a credit on the film as one of the actors.
One,
I think a lot of the people were
where I was supposed to go in the back of the car when we were leaving town at the end of the show. My father, the sheriff, got kicked out of town. And instead of going in the back seat of the car, I climbed over Martha Heyer and went between them in the front seat.
You missed your cue.
Could have used a little more directing on that.
He missed his cue. How funny is that?
Yeah. Yeah, but it was great. You know what? I got paid $50 a day.
Wow.
I worked 3 days, and that was enough to come up with half the price of a Honda 70, and my mom and dad matched the other half.
Wow.
I was a lucky kid.
That's great.
1970 prices. There you go.
For those of you who are not clear about how important that motorcycle was, that's how we got back and forth to school.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So, Greg, these were, of course, and Steve, thank you so much for calling in today. I know we'll have a couple other callers, but I wanted to thank you very much for being there for us today. And
you're welcome, guys.
And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right.
God bless.
I love you guys.
All right. Take care. Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Go ahead, Dan.
So, Greg, you know, that was, of course, a couple folks. I know that you'd hit Havasu. How far of a reach was it to do the interviews? I mean, obviously you traveled to Havasu and Phoenix. Were there any other destinations that you had to achieve?
Well, yeah, not for the Havasu people. So by the time I started the documentary, again, this is 2007, some of the people were fairly spread out. One of the wolves, wolf number 7, a guy called Smokey Roberts, and he, by 2007, he was in Fayetteville, Arkansas, as a chiropractor. That's where he changed careers, midlife. And so that was probably the furthest out I went for an interview. Although I did an interview with Rick Waite, who was a cinematographer. You know, Rick Waite was a major force in 1980s films, things like 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and, you know, Brewster's Millions and a whole bunch of other stuff. He went on to, in fact, most of the crew went on to great fame and fortune after Day of the Wolves. It was either their first or one of their first films. And he was in Denver, so I filmed him in Denver. And I think that's the furthest out. Most of the other folks were in the Los Angeles area, or, you know, Hollywood Hills in the case of Peter McGregor Scott, who was the production manager.
Man, so that's, how long did it take you in the process of doing all those interviews? I mean, are we talking months or a year?
You know, most of it got wrapped up fairly quickly. We're talking. I mean, the basis of the film pretty much got wrapped up within 2007. And during that, as I say, I was running my own group, and I was essentially self-managed, so I was able to pick and choose my times of working. And so I was able to come to Havasu, you know, multiple times to talk to people. I got quite used to driving the distance. I really wish you guys had a scheduled airline over there, but you know, it is what it is.
Yep.
So I got used to driving the track from San Diego to Havasu.
Yeah, the only difference between you and everybody else is they had a boat behind them.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna take another quick break. We're here with Greg Quinn, film producer of the documentary for Day of the Wolves, and we'll be right back.
All right, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie, the host of Speak Out, along with Dan De Los Santos, the host of the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Watch his hand.
All right, welcome back to the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, brought to you in part by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. Our other sponsors include Arizona Financial Credit Union, also Mojave Community College, SunPower by Esme Electric, SamsGuns.com, the Lewis Team, REMAX by the Lakewood Team Leader Bobby Lewis and Julie Lewis, Doritos Place, providing Havasu with all-natural dog and cat food along with pet toys since 2006, and featuring those Havasu famous self-service doggy washes, and by Salmon's Air Conditioning, serving the tri-state area for over 52 years. Ask about Salmon's superior maintenance plan. And don't forget, Dan, buy local or it's bye-bye local. That's how it works.
That's exactly right.
Right. And back to our guest on
Absolutely.
The Havasu Pioneers Radio Show.
We are with filmmaker Greg Quinn, and we're talking about the efforts that he has put together to create a documentary back in the day about the film Day of the Wolves. So, Greg, you know, I understand that on top of the efforts that you've made with the film, the documentary, that you've put some time and effort into a book. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. So I initially started just writing this down. I'm getting older, I'm not saying I'm predicting my own death or anything, but I just wanted to put my thoughts down about this and write it down in fair detail. And it got to the point where I thought, well, I've got this thing. I can probably, put this out. As you know, it's very easy now to self-publish stuff, and it's not particularly expensive to do that. So in the past, I guess, year or so, I've put together a book on the making of Day of the Wolves, and like the documentary, it has the title When Hollywood Went to Havasu, and it covers some things in much more detail, things like the background of the producer, Ferdy Gorofe Jr., a lot more information about what happened after the film, post-production hiccups, stuff that had to be done, and where the film stands now in sort of general terms of critics and so forth. So it has a different, and it also has much more about the actors. There's really nothing in the documentary per se, the one that you saw, that has really very much about the actors at all, outside of Havasu, the Hollywood actors. And I've been working with help from the Havasu History Museum. Mm-hmm. They've been extremely helpful, Gillian and company. And there's plenty of photographs in it. It's quite a large book. It's like 9x11, so it's almost sort of verging on a coffee table book in the sense that it has a lot of photographs in it, some which have never actually seen the light of day before, such as Peter McGregor Scott working after Day of the Wolves on Animal House, which is one of the most successful movies ever made, dollar for dollar in terms of production values. So hopefully, it will be interesting to people who enjoy the film, but also beyond that, in terms of how an early independent production took flight, so to speak. So yeah, that's kind of one thing I did want to mention about the documentary is, in addition to great help from all the folks in town, the folks at the Havasu Herald were tremendously helpful, and they provided access to their archives, and they provided permission to use photographs of their newspaper in the documentary. So I'm extremely grateful for their support as well.
Well, I know Brandon Bowers will be excited to hear that, the editor in chief of the Havasu Herald, and so he's always been a great public supporter here in our community, and I'm glad to hear that. I know that,
great,
like the movie, when you came to town, people were very anxious to do whatever they could to help you along your path, along with, obviously doing the interviews and things of that nature. So the book, it's not ready for publishing yet, is that correct?
Well, I'm doing is taking note of the corrections that were provided to me by Ferdy Groffet, by Floyd Hamilton. He's taking a look at the early proof copy, and I'm taking, I'm adjusting accordingly. So what I would say, and I'm going to give some copies to the Havasu Museum, mm-hmm. is that, if you're interested in this, then there should be copies available towards the end of the year. I can't exactly say when. It could be around September, October time frame, but I'm sure there'll be an announcement. And I did tell Gillian that I would, she asked me, could I come in and sign some when they actually arrive, and I said yes, I would. So that's possibly down the line as well.
Excellent, excellent. And so I know that a lot of people are listening to the show right now, and I got to tell you, while we've been doing the show live, I got texts from several people who actually are up online right now watching Day of the Wolves.
Yeah, you're getting YouTube hits. You're getting hits on YouTube. So I'm not sure how that pays off, but hopefully we can muster up enough residents and listeners that'll go on there and check it out. Day of the Wolves on YouTube. Just search for that.
Right? I'm sure that's all they really got to do.
Yeah.
I found it myself and actually watched the movie. It's interesting.
How was it?
You know, when you look, what we're all looking for, now, granted, it's cool to see the actors, but we're looking for the backdrop.
Absolutely.
And Havasu back in the day was nothing but a desert, right?
Right.
And we're going, hey, I know where that is. I know it before they started building all over it. So it's really fun. It's an iconic thing to be able to watch and look back into your past.
Greg, how often have you been here since?
I have not, in fact. The last, I was trying to think if I visited in 2008. I know I went back several times to Swansea to see Mike Riddle there, mm-hmm. Who unfortunately is no longer with us. And I may have visited Havasu during those times. To be honest, I don't remember. But it would have been a number of years, actually. It's probably about 2007, 2008.
So somebody just chimed in and said they actually found it on Prime, which I thought is pretty interesting. So
Amazon Prime. How about that?
Apparently the movie has not quite died off yet. So another few minutes left in our show, one of the things that I'm asked about more than anything else, Greg, is knowing that, the documentary has slowly slipped under the covers, if you will. What are the odds or the chances that there's a possibility that we could create a private showing of what you have here in Havasu, should we get behind it, provide the facilities, do a premiere, if you will, with the actors that are still alive and have them attend and, get a chance to meet you again.
And do a Q&A.
Oh, yeah, a Q&A would be fun.
Right.
Q&A, yeah. So I'm hopeful at some point we can show a version of the documentary in town. So, when I did the version, I think that you've seen, Dan,
mm-hmm.
And that was around the beginning of 2020. And so here's the deal. Here's how this normally works with an independent film. Typically, either during production or after production, and stop me if you're running short of time.
Yeah, we'll be good.
You will normally get errors and omissions insurance, your E&O insurance, is taken out on the film to get a distributor. No distributor is going to take a film without insurance, liability insurance of some kind. And that's because, for example, if someone, feels they've been depicted badly in the film, or, they feel they were forced to sign a waiver under duress or whatever, that there is legal coverage. So and even with that, you're still paying, like $5,000, $10,000 per instance of getting sued. I mean, hopefully one never does. But anyway, this project has never been distributed, and so it's never had E&O insurance. And so to get, find another way of doing this so I'm not personally liable,
right?
I actually cover liability on this. my initial path was to contact folks associated with film afresh. And I started that in 2020 and provide them the opportunity to view the film and get feedback from them. So, you know, they could raise any concerns. And everyone who saw it said, you know, said it's fine, there's nothing to worry about. Unfortunately, two things happened. One was COVID in early 2020.
Oh, man.
Which kind of
stopped. It's always COVID, isn't it?
It's always COVID, yeah. It stopped everything in its tracks. And so, you know, I put that on the back burner. Secondly, I have to say I never heard back from some of the participants who I contacted, or next of kin, in some cases, because not everyone was still around. So if there's a way to move this ahead, to get a local showing, I'm completely open to it. Perhaps you and I can brainstorm offline about how we can make this happen.
That would be wonderful. Maybe we can look at a nonprofit scenario, you know, but I'm with you. We can talk about it offline, but I can tell you
that
we absolutely as a community would love to have you and your documentary film here for reviewing, because we still have obviously several of the individuals that were in the movie still with us today. And before we, you know, before their demise, I'd sure like them to have the opportunity to see it, because thought it was really well done. And so did everybody I talked to that had a chance to see it. And I think it's really worth the effort to try to bring home, if you will, to Lake Havasu.
Sure. That sounds great.
Hey, Greg, I'm a huge fan of documentaries. I'm a former videographer as well. Was that a reason for you to start this project? Are you a big documentary fan too? Hello?
Greg,
are you still there?
I may have lost him.
I think we did.
Greg, you there? Oh, yep, we lost him.
He just cut off.
Yep, his phone might have went dead. So if you're still there, Greg, give us a call back. But we've been talking with Greg Quinn about his documentary. Is he calling back in?
Yes.
Oh, great. We're going to get him back.
All right. Are you still there, Greg?
Are we on?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I'm on. So the line just cut or it went crazy.
Interesting.
It's COVID.
I don't know how much of my question that you heard, but are you
your question came through. Yeah, I am a fan of documentaries, but to be honest, when we acquired all this HD equipment, the plan was to, because I also write screenplays, unproduced screenplays, I should say, and the plan was to maybe, you know, turn some of those into narrative films. And we thought that, you know, a way of doing this would just to get some experience would be to work on a couple of documentaries. One of them was about a female bodybuilder based in San Diego called Debbie Bramwell. Hmm. And that was pushed out in 2010. And the other was this Day of the Wolves project. And both of them turned out to be way more complicated than producing, I think, a narrative production. You know, which has, you know, is very finite in the way it's structured. So documentary filmmaking is a true art, and I'm in awe of people, you know, some of the great documentary filmmakers. Like that guy on PBS, who's often on PBS, I've forgotten his name now, but there are some wonderful documentary filmmakers in this country, yeah.
Yeah, Ken Burns, for sure.
Ken Burns, thank you.
Right. Hey, you know, there's usually a lot of travel involved in documentary filmmaking as well. Crisscrossing the country, one conversation leads to another. You end up flying somewhere where you hadn't even planned on your itinerary.
Oh, sure.
That. Was there a lot of that going on?
Well, not so much. Because the film, Down the Walls, you know, had a relatively small number of core people in it, you know, in terms of the actors. They were either in Havasu. I mean, I will say that a lot of people had migrated from Havasu to California or migrated to other places in Arizona, for example. Mm-hmm. Steve, you know, I met him. I can't remember exactly where he was.
Saguaro Lake?
Steve was in Phoenix when you did the interview.
Okay.
Phoenix, yeah. And Maxine Bratz, Maxine Holmgren now, was in California, as was at that time Wendy. Some of those folks have moved around, but you know, not, all of this is still sort of West Coast, you know, based. And honestly, it was not a chore at all. Everyone was just so nice, and I just found the stuff so interesting.
Well,
and I think that's key. I mean, you've got to work on something that you find interesting, which you can. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I know several of the people that you interviewed or remain my close friends after all these years, 50 years for some.
Oh, sure.
Steve included, of course, is at that list. And you know, I know that they're listening to the show today. I know they're thrilled to actually get a chance to hear you talk about the documentary and your efforts.
Great.
And again, you know, I'm getting messages here off our – we have the Havasu Pioneers Facebook page.
Right.
And so if you'd like to – see this documentary come to fruition here in Havasu, you know, chime in on that page, Havasu Pioneers Facebook page. Let us know you'd like to see it. If you need to, if you have solutions to some of the questions that Greg and I have about making that happen, you know, don't hesitate to give me a call. You can reach me at 928-706-4469, and I'll look forward to hearing what you have to suggest. So, Greg, you know, I think as we wind up the show here, the first thing I want to say is thank you so much for being here today with us and being able to share the insights from the film and obviously from the efforts you've put forward in the documentary and the book. So we'll be looking forward to seeing copies of the book. I would imagine we'll find copies at the Lake Havasu City Museum of History.
Yes, that will be the place to go. Yeah.
Wonderful.
You need signed copies.
Oh, yeah, we need signed copies. Well, you're going to have to come down and do a signing of the book.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. You bet.
We're good.
So it was great having Greg Quinn, film producer and creator for the documentary Day of the Wolves. And our next show will be in July.
Yeah, why don't you look that up during the break?
Yep.
And we'll come back. We'll take a short break. Greg, thanks for joining us today on the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show.
You're welcome, guys. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
We appreciate it. Thank you for calling back as well. All right. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take a short break. Back with more in a moment. We'll have a final shot on the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show. Stay with us.
And my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere.
I'm not your stepping stone. No!
All right, a little Paul Revere and the Raiders. Loved working with that band back in the day when they were in Harris Showroom. Hey, on tomorrow's show, we'll have Mojave County Public Works Director Steve Latosky. Fantastic guest, by the way. Always has a lot to bring to the show, and we appreciate him. He's supposed to come into the studio. And you were saying, when is the next Havasu Pioneers radio show, Dan?
It is July 5th at 11 a.m.
Wait a minute. The day after the 4th.
That's correct. But the nice part is that's actually, I think, a Wednesday.
Ah.
So it is a Wednesday. And, of course, it's in the middle of the week. So I think all our visitors will be coming in the weekend before and the weekend after.
All of our shows, as they're originally broadcast over the air on KNTR Talk, are on the first Wednesday of the month. So that's super, super easy to remember when it comes to the Havasu Pioneers radio show. Don't forget, the archive of this show will be posted shortly after we're done here at KNTRTalk.com. Just go to Havasu Pioneers. The link right there.
Absolutely. And if we're really lucky, our next guest speaker will be talking about Jean Camp. We're trying to put that show together right now. Deanne Beaver, she is just a super knowledgeable individual about a very special place many of you have never heard of. And it has to do with our river, the aqueduct, and 50 years of history of getting water to California.
10 seconds. What's the name of the place?
Oh, Jean Camp.
Oh, Jean Camp.
Yeah, we're gonna try. We're gonna see what happens.
Gotcha. I thought that was a person.
Yeah.
All
I'm
right.
Sure it probably is.
Hannity's up next after Fox News, of course, or preceded by Fox News. We'll see you tomorrow on Speak Out. Have a great day.
This is KNTR Talk, KJJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.